Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for another digital capsule of the GU ASCO Bayer Ambassador Program meeting. I'm Dr. Steve Yip. I'm a medical oncologist at the Tom Baker Cancer Center and the chair Southern of Alberta GU Tumor Group, as well as the medical lead of POET. I'm here with Dr. Lori Klotz here, who is a uro-oncologist from Toronto, Ontario, who will summarize the highlights and interesting abstract to PROPEL phase 3 clinical trial of olaparib and abiraterone versus placebo and abiraterone in the first line space of patients with metastatic castration resistant prostate cancer. Thanks very much for being with us, Dr. Klotz, and please share with us the highlights of the PROPEL trial.
Thanks, Dr. Yip. And yeah, it really was a great pleasure to take part in this program. And just a brief disclaimer from Bayer. And I was asked to review this PROPEL trial, which I think is potentially a practice-changing trial. Although, as you'll see, maybe we're not quite there yet, but I believe it's really quite an important observation. This was a phase 3 trial of olaparib and abiraterone versus placebo and abiraterone as first line therapy for patients with metastatic CRPC. And this was presented by Dr. Fred Saad, one of our own, but it was clearly an international trial with input from investigators all over the world. Just brief background. Clearly, metastatic CRPC is an area where we need to improve median survival of about 3 years. Many patients only receive one line of therapy. There's a major unmet need to improve outcomes. Olaparib monotherapy has been demonstrated in one trial to prolong RPFS and overall survival in those patients who had homologous recombination gene alterations, particularly BRCA 1 or 2 and ATM. And more recently, there's been a phase 2 trial showing prolonged RPFS in patients with metastatic CRPC who have been treated with docetaxel with the combination of olaparib and abiraterone. And importantly, the benefit of the olaparib was seen irrespective of the HRR mutation status. Now, that is somewhat counterintuitive. I think at this point, everyone in the field is familiar with the impact of DNA repair pathway mutations and the benefit of olaparib in patients who have those mutations. But there is actually a fair bit of preclinical data that these two pathways may result in synthetic lethality in synergistic activity by targeting both pathways. The PARP inhibition has been reported to increase the activity of novel hormonal agents or ARATs via AR-dependent transcription. And in that sense, it joins a number of other non-androgenic molecules that increase AR-dependent transcription without binding to the androgen receptor. And by the same token, the novel hormonal agents are reported to induce HRR deficiency and increase susceptibility to PARP inhibition. So you have from both sides of this situation, the potential for synergistic activity between these two compounds. And this shows the results of the randomized phase 2 trial that was the basis for going forward. Patients with metastatic CRPC, independent of HRR mutation status, prior docetaxel, 1-to-1 randomization. And this was a positive trial with statistically significant improvement in PFS with the combination And again, while the, as you see on the right, while the HRR mutation status resulted in a improved effect compared to patients whose status was partially characterized, the patients without the mutation had an equal, if not a greater, benefit in terms of the combination. So this supports the preclinical data suggesting that irrespective of the status of the patient's homologous recombination pathway, there could be benefit from the PARP inhibitors. So this was a trial involving approximately 800 patients. The patient population were men on first line CRPC. They could have had docetaxel at the hormone sensitive stage, but could not have had prior abiraterone. This is a fairly critical characteristic of this trial, as you'll see. They could have had non-abiraterone ARATs if they were at least a year off therapy, ongoing ADT, ECOG 0 to 1. They were stratified for distant met sites being bone versus visceral versus other, and prior taxanes. And the randomization was abiraterone in both groups, olaparib in one group, placebo in the other, the primary endpoint, radiographic progression or death, RPFS, secondary endpoints, overall survival, and a number of additional progression-related endpoints. Due to the magic of randomization, the patients were well-balanced according to all of the major potential confounders, including ECOG, site of disease, prior docetaxel, and their DNA repair pathway mutation status. And this was the primary endpoint, and the study was positive. So at 24 months, 51% versus 33% on placebo were free of progression, p-value less than 0.001, hazard ratio 0.66 for RPFS, and median RPFS improvement of 8.2 months, favoring the combination. So, you know, I think this is really an important observation, quite exciting. It's the first time there's been, I would say, convincing evidence that this combination, particularly in the non-HRR mutated patients, results in an improvement. The subgroup analysis showed that essentially every subgroup benefited, including, again, the patients with HRR status, greater benefit as really one would expect. This wasn't particularly seen in the phase two trial, but that likely reflects the small sample size. And the patients with non-HRR mutations, without mutations, still had a significant benefit in terms of RPFS. This is the limitation of the trial. There was a trend to a benefit in terms of overall survival, hazard ratio 0.86, but you can see that this is still premature. The longest follow-up is out to about 30 months. Statistical significance was not achieved. This is also a much more modest effect size. So this reflects the fact that less than 30% of the patients have reached maturity, but nonetheless, it's a trend. And I think the key take-home point with respect to this trial is that longer follow-up is going to be required before we can draw firm conclusions about a survival benefit. The other endpoints were time to first subsequent therapy or death, time to second progression or death. Again, both showed statistically significant improvement with the combination. Objective response rate, about a 10% improvement in ORR with the combination compared to abiraterone alone, 58 versus 48%. Safety profile was really quite favorable, and no real surprises here. So the main difference was that about 14% of patients discontinued olaparib or placebo, olaparib in the olaparib arm, versus about 8% in the placebo arm. So about a 6% difference with the olaparib, and really no significant difference between the two arms in terms of discontinuation of abiraterone. And this shows the most common adverse events. Really, again, no surprises. More anemia with the olaparib group. And there was an increase in thromboembolic events in the olaparib group, which I'll come to in a moment. But basically, this combination is quite well tolerated. So at baseline, the rate of cardiac failure and thromboembolic events were balanced, but you can see here 6.5% pulmonary embolism compared to 1.8% on the placebo arm. That was the major difference. This is not really a surprise. There is evidence from prior trials that this is definitely a risk associated with olaparib, and certainly something to be aware of. Quality of life. There is a kind of trend to somewhat reduce quality of life in the olaparib arm, but you can see these error bars are overlapping at every single time point. So the author's conclusion was that there was no significant quality of life difference between the two arms. So these are the author's conclusions, that the combination led to significant clinically meaningful improvement in RPFS, hazard ratio 0.66, compared to placebo plus abiraterone, median RPFS beyond 2 years, benefit irrespective of HRR mutation status. The secondary endpoints all supported the treatment benefit. The safety of the combination was consistent with the profile for the individual drugs, and no significant impact on quality of life. And they conclude that this PROPEL study is the first combination approach to deliver consistent clinical benefits for patients in the first line CRPC setting, irrespective of their HRR status. My perspective, I think this is an important trial, but it's not a finished trial and we need longer follow-up, mainly to determine if indeed there's a survival benefit. Given the cost of these drugs, given the somewhat increased morbidity, particularly with respect to pulmonary embolism, I think one would be hesitant to define this as a standard of care until there is robust evidence that a survival benefit exists with the combination. You will hear shortly about the results of the MAGNITUDE trial of niraparib, which is a similar trial with some important differences. The likely benefit in the PROPEL trial was driven by the patients who had bone metastasis, and particularly those patients who had BRCA2 population. As you will see, the different MAGNITUDE results likely reflects differences in study design, differences in the patient population and patient selection. And there will be, I am sure, a robust discussion going forward as to the respective implications of these two trials. Thank you for your attention, and I look forward to discussion.
Thanks very much, Dr. Klotz. That's an excellent overview of PROPEL. And I think you really hit the nail on the head of already discussing this in the context of MAGNITUDE. So from your perspective, obviously there's been discussion already about how the two trials are quite different right off the bat, with MAGNITUDE having the two discrete cohorts, biomarker positive versus negative, whereas PROPEL being the all-comers patient population. Yes. How do you see that this could potentially impact future care, particularly as patients are being seen from a genetics testing perspective, from a consideration of intensification of therapy? knowing that both trials might eventually potentially impact survival. We'll have to see what the final readout is.
I wish I had the answer to that question. I mean, as I said, I don't think we're at the point yet of widespread adoption of this strategy as first line. Although my prediction is that it's going to pan out. I mean, I think that data looks quite good. It's just we're not quite there yet. But there's a trend to survival benefit. There just aren't that many events. I can tell you that at the moment, we have a real problem in terms, at least in my world, of characterizing the HRR mutation patients. Germline is straightforward, but the majority of these patients with HR mutations in the cancer do not have a germline mutation. I think it's around 60%. And we do not have a streamlined way of detecting these HRR mutations in patients who are at risk for it, other than the germline testing, which is straightforward. So I think the observation that actually all patients stand to benefit will be quite important, and it will kind of get us off this difficult situation we're in now, where we know there's a benefit to patients, the benefit of olaparib to patients who have the mutation, but we don't have a good way of identifying them. So it'll make our life easier if we don't have to identify it. So that's kind of my spin on it at the moment. And, you know, I mean, time will tell.
I agree. It's going to be a major challenge, and it already is, as a result of Profound, to offer testing when, you know, the drug is coming and Health Canada is approved and provinces are rolling it out. And, you know, the next question is going to be, how does the outcome get impacted when we see upfront combination in these patients versus should we do it sequenced, right? Is this really a signal of maybe you're just introducing the two and, you know, you could sequence them versus should we bring everything up front, hit them with, you know, everything we've got immediately? Certainly the trend is that we've seen early intensification, at least in the advanced prostate cancer space, tends to improve patients' outcomes, but it'll be very interesting to see what does come. What are your thoughts about that? Do you see this more as a sequence or a combination?
Yeah. So I have felt for a long time that a lot of the study designs finesse the early versus deferred question. And that's true, for example, of Charted. It's true of Latitude. It's true of a number of these studies that we use to justify early intervention with the ARATs. But they really, none of these studies were, you know, early versus deferred ARAT. And in many of them, Charted's a case in point. The patients on the placebo arm did not get life prolonging therapy once they progressed. So, but on the other hand, the data now seems to be accumulating that actually there is a benefit to early, as you alluded to. And so I think a certain amount of skepticism is warranted. You have to look at the study design and say, does this design actually tell us whether early therapy is beneficial, or does it just tell us that some therapy is better than no therapy? And, you know, so I'm kind of a skeptic in general about the value of early. I think deferred therapy in many cases is as good until you get the data. And what I'm trying to say in a roundabout way is the data is starting to accumulate, despite my skepticism, that actually early combined therapy has a benefit.
Yeah, I would say that from my perspective, as an all-comer patient population, I certainly have no idea. But from the patients, especially the BRCA2 patients and some of the like BRCA1, BRCA2, perhaps ATM, they certainly have a more aggressive variant oftentimes. And our work, you know, Dr. Chi had already mentioned at his discussion of the abstract in the context of the two, that these patients rapidly progress. they might respond initially to an ARET, but they can move so quickly that you might not catch up, especially when you're trying to chase them with chemo. So, you know, at least better access to PARP inhibitors and genetic testing is heavily underlined by both of these trials. And largely, probably those guys might be the ones that you want to throw everything at. But we'll have to wait and see for more real-world data and more mature data from this. Well, thanks very much. Thank you very much for the excellent discussion and for the great overview of both of these trials. And thanks again for tuning in for another video capsule on all this time. Thank you, Dr.
All right, good.
Have a great day. Thank you.